ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Patricia Carvalis here. I'm the host of the Politics Now podcast, and I spend a lot of time talking to politicians, usually grilling them. But over summer, I want to introduce you to the people behind the politics.
Oh my goodness, how long have we got?
Political parties, if they're just seen as sort of custodians of political values or traditions, it's not enough.
You can find the interview series in the Politics Now podcast feed.
Donald Trump says help is on its way for the Iranians who've taken to the streets in the biggest uprising since the 1979 revolution. But what does he mean by help? Is he ready to order military strikes as the death toll continues to climb into the thousands? Today, Hussein Abish from the Arab Gulf States Institute on what to expect in the days ahead. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Under the cover of darkness and dressed in black, defiant protesters march through the streets of Tehran.
For 2 weeks and counting, demonstrators have taken to the streets, which are now lined with the dead.
The extent of the violent crackdown is slowly emerging amid a communications blackout. Human rights groups and an Iranian official say more than 2,500 people have been killed.
To all Iranian patriots, keep protesting, take over your institutions if possible, and save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused. I say make Iran great again. You know, it's a great country until these monsters came in and took it over.
Hussein, why don't we start back on December the 28th, when this latest round of protests in Iran began. Just remind me what was going on back then.
Well, the main catalyst and proximate cause for these protests has been the downward spiral, the collapse of the Iranian currency, the rial. What really happened is that a variety of economic factors converged, rendering the Iranian economy particularly vulnerable to this intensified sanctions coming from the Trump administration. On the back of Iran's strategic setbacks and defeats, its humiliations, and now this economic crisis in Iran, a lot of water shortages as well, really brought people onto the streets.
And it was shopkeepers in Tehran's bazaars that really took these first steps. Just to put this into context, Hussein, Iran's inflation, it's up around 50 to 70%. It's insane.
It's hyperinflation. It's the kind of inflation that means that you really will spend currency as soon as you get it because it'll be, you know, noticeably less valuable tonight than it is this morning. And when you get into that kind of a situation, the economy can't really function. So the whole thing is in a free fall.
Yeah. All right. So the protests began with the shopkeepers, but of course, then they began to spread.
They spread very quickly.
Yeah. And who is involved now, do we know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly broad range of Iranian society. It's lots of different people involved with different grievances, but they overlap. The nightmare for the Iranian regime is finally coming true. Because what we've seen since 1979 is protests that come from one sector or another. For example, women's rights protesters would take to the street over the hijab and head coverings or other repressive social gender legislation and policy. But that would be it. Or workers would take to the streets over not getting paid or inflation or, you know, the absence of jobs. But then the kind of feminist protesters wouldn't join them, as they wouldn't join the rights-based groups. So they haven't come together until now. And that's the big difference. Now you see people working hand in hand to undermine the regime. And that's the nightmare that the government has been fearing all along.
Okay, because yes, there were protests in 1999, 2009, 2019, 2022.
Exactly.
But the last revolution, of course, was in 1979. Now, just take me back there briefly. Just explain what happened then, because that is when the Islamic Republic came about.
Well, what happened then was something pretty similar, which is that the country was feeling weakened and humiliated. And especially there was a really broad-based sense at the time, especially among the youth, that the Shah's regime was, first of all, too repressive, and secondly, too incompetent, that it was mismanaging society. And also, I think a big part of the elite in Iran turned away from the government. And what ended up happening is the reactionary right, led by Ayatollah Khomeini, sort of opportunistically took over from a very broad-based insurrection.
In the last few violent weeks, Imperial Iran has collapsed. The Shah in exile, his mighty army beaten in the streets, his secret service purged, his oil wells shut down. His country under the rule of Islamic-styled men of God.
It's not as if everyone who was protesting was, you know, sort of united in wanting a small group of vanguard ideological revolutionaries to take over. But what you end up with is a situation where when those groups do exist, they are able to take advantage of the revolutionary moment and seize concentrated political power for ideological purposes.
So do you think this could be the start of a revolution like we saw in 1979?
Yeah, I do think so. The one thing that we have yet identified is who would challenge the religious right for power in Iran in an ideological way. And that's not too unusual at this stage of a revolutionary situation. But, you know, in order for this government to fall and be replaced, some group is going to have to challenge it that has a coherent alternative in mind and one that's, you know, fairly broadly acceptable and that will inevitably claim to be acting in behalf of everybody else, but that possibly won't be. And that would become clear as they solidified power, consolidated, and turned on their enemies. However, there is something else brewing, which is the potential for a Venezuela scenario where people in the regime decide to offer a sacrificial victim to the West, to the United States, the way that Maduro was unseated without much pushback. And then you have this group within the regime try to do a deal with Donald Trump in order to survive. And that is something that's being widely discussed. What happens to the nuclear program, what they would have to give in order to secure American support or acquiescence, and also how you could possibly engineer the departure of the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, is not known. He is 86, and he could pass away at any moment. And he could also decide that he needs to retire. So there are various scenarios where that is something that people close to the regime, if they feel it's the only way to survive, might try to explore.
Well, Donald Trump, he has sent a message to the protesters saying help is on its way and urging them to take over institutions.
Yep.
So what do you make of that?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. He is trying to fan the flames of regime change in Iran and essentially, I think, sort of hinting at the prospects of a Venezuela-style scenario where sort of second tier of the regime offers a series of concessions.
Iran's supreme leader, he does say that the regime is prepared for conflict but ready to negotiate.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, his regime has been weakened, hasn't it?
It's unprecedentedly weakened. And if news reports are to be believed, thousands of people have been killed in the past few days, perhaps up to 5,000 people in a few days. That is absolutely extraordinary. Usually regimes don't survive that degree of repression. Usually when that amount of force is inflicted, either the crisis is driven off the headlines and out of the streets because people are simply afraid to continue, or the regime is out of options and it's going to fall. And so we'll see what happens. There is the potential that it could be that enough force has been used to suppress the revolutionaries, but I don't think so.
It is so hard, of course, to get information out of Iran because there is an internet blackout. But even so, yeah, we are seeing these dreadful images of bodies at a mortuary in Tehran, for instance. As you say, the death toll, it's estimated at around 2,000, some reports 5,000. It could be a lot more, and it could be growing all the time.
Right. We really don't know. One of the things that allows information to get out of Iran is the Starlink system. And the U.S. has been discussing dropping Starlink devices all over Iran. And that would actually be a very interesting thing to do, because there are still people with Starlink devices working without the knowledge of the regime who are sending information and pictures out on a regular basis. And that's how we really know what's going on. This is a crucial element of information getting out without the regime being able to control it.
All right. Well, Hussein, let's return to that idea of the regime falling and then what comes next. Now, I see the son of a former Shah who's living in the United States is promoting himself as a potential leader.
Iran's freedom is near. The blood shed by Iran's immortal sons and daughters guides our path towards victory. We are not alone. International support will soon arrive.
Is that a viable option?
I don't think it's a viable option. I mean, I'd be surprised. But, you know, he sort of has no real credentials other than being the son of the late Shah. And that's really not a wonderful credential. You know, the same applies to the longstanding opposition group, the Mujahideen Khalq, which is led by a woman called Maryam Rajavi. And they are a very radical kind of mashup of ultra-left-wing and religious reactionary ideologies. And again, I think these are groups that have their supporters in the West, but don't have a lot of pull inside Iran. The likely sort of character of an alternative administration would be probably something we don't know much about. And the fact that it's so remote and hard to identify is one of the strongest suits the regime still has going for it.
Right. So Hussein, it is very hard to know exactly what is unfolding inside Iran. But tell me, what needs to change in the days or the weeks or even the months ahead for the regime to fail, for the Islamic Republic to fall? What should we be looking out for?
Well, I mean, for sure, of course, the most obvious thing is more protests and more deadly protests and the spreading of the pressure from separatist groups on the periphery of Iranian society. If the economy continues in freefall, then it's going to be very hard for the regime to turn this around. And finally, it would look to parts of the power structure abandoning the current regime, parts of the paramilitary turning ranks, parts of the formal military abandoning the regime, the rise of alternative, viable political groupings, or even the emergence of an alternative from within Iran that has the support of Western governments and Arab governments.
And the help that Donald Trump has promised, when will that come?
I would be surprised if there are not some American or Israeli strikes against Iranian government targets, especially nuclear targets, in the next few days.
Hussein Abish is a senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington, D.C. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.